we're standing there playing. The sun's beating down on us, and we're, like, looking at the distant mountains, and it's, like, the desert in front of us. It was crazy. Like, it was definitely a unique experience that I've never had before.
Meanwhile, Sean is in the back hastily making us tuna sandwiches for the road.
Doing just fine since he's used to that.
Thank you, Sean.
Shout out. Hey, all you road dogs.
Hello.
Hope you're all doing well out there. We are in the van again. We have seen some pretty amazing scenery, some geography that we've never seen before. We've seen quite a bit of the United States because we have a lot of family and friends in other areas, but never before have we seen these areas of California that we've driven through. Specifically, the valley and the desert in Joshua Tree. Absolutely amazing.
So cool.
Also, yeah. I'd like to point out that Becca literally thought there was one single Joshua Tree.
I thought I read somewhere that it might be right that, like, actually the area of Joshua Tree only
Joshua Tree was named Joshua trees were named from the Mormons that traveled through in the 1800s and thought that the trees looked like Joshua from the Bible reaching up praising the Lord.
We're super religious.
Can you tell I know a lot about that story?
We're just two Jews coming at you talking about the Bible.
Oh, man. Anyways, so, yeah, the Joshua trees are actually really cool looking if you've never seen them. They almost look like cacti, but they're not. They're, like, definitely not. Like, you see them and you're like, is that a... Wait, that's not a cactus. That's a tree.
I just love...
And they're everywhere. They're scattered all across the desert.
I know. I love, like... Because I don't think I've really ever been to the desert area, at least in the U.S. So I feel like driving through it, I'm just in awe by the things that can survive there because I can't as a human. And so when I see, like, a tree that I'm like, wow, Joshua trees, you know what you're doing. You're kind of in the middle of, like, a weird, like, cactus and a pine tree looking thing. And it's just figured out its niche and it's doing well.
Somehow. It's pretty amazing. And then also it was really interesting to see the inhabitants there in Joshua Tree because I really had no idea what to expect. I hadn't really even seen that many photos of the area. And then we drive through the San Bernardino Forest. We came from
Big Bear
Lake the night before. So we drive over the mountains, and then you suddenly get into this, like, valley, and there you are from the desert. And it's like suddenly there are just these scattered homes throughout the desert.
It happens so quick,
so quickly. And there's nothing around you. Nothing around you but these scattered homes throughout. And you're like... What do you do
here? They're not farming. There aren't farms. So still to this day, I'm a little confused.
I mean, there were some animals. Maybe you had, like, cows. Not really, though.
There weren't.
No, chickens, maybe? I didn't really see that many at all. And then you, like, start to come upon, there's, like, Yucca Valley, and then there's Joshua Tree, and those towns are, like, a little bit more inhabited, but they're not, like, but they're far. I mean, you drive for, what, like, an hour through that?
Yeah.
With nothing around.
Yeah, first it starts, it looked like it was definitely more of, like, a poorer community when you first got into the desert. And, like, once again, I'm like, I don't know what people do for a living there. It's very interesting. But then you keep driving, and then it looks like it gets more into, like, wealthier people who are, like, trying to do cool architecture in the desert at some point.
And we were driving towards Pioneer Town, which is where our episode is going to take us. Pioneer Town is a small, very small little town that was built in the 40s by Gene Autry and Roy Rogers that decided they wanted to make a cool Western set for films. And so they, like, built these random, like, a town that was supposed to look like the Wild West.
Yeah.
Pioneer Town. They built a saloon, they built, like, a jailhouse, like, all these random little places that could act as, like, sets, movie set. Yeah,
it is pretty cool. And I guess, didn't you say, like, it used to be used more for movie sets and now it's not?
It's still used. It's still used. I guess there were over, like, 50 films that were filmed there from the time it was built until, I guess, modern times. But they, there, it's still used, and we found that out pretty quickly. So we got there.
We tried to, we're like, because we're doing these cover songs and cover videos with every episode. So we're like, oh my gosh, this would be a really cool place to do our little cover video. We're like, okay, cool. Because there's like no shade. It's in the desert. So we were not about to like just stop on the side of the road and be in 105 degree heat. So then we're like, okay, this is a great place to film. And then we saw some guy watering plants. We're like, okay, he must work here. We asked him if we could just do a quick little video. And he's like, oh, okay. Yeah, I can set you up right here. Yeah, it's going to be 100 an hour.
And then he's silent and we're all silent. We're like,
we thought he was joking.
Couldn't tell if he was being serious. And I'm like, are you being is that real?
And he's just like
yeah. And I was like, Becca, what do you think? She's like, yeah, I think we'll move on. We're like, okay, thank you. He was like, yeah, this is a working movie set. And I was like, oh, okay, yeah. I forgot that that you actually rent these places out. There was nobody around, and I think it was closed when we were, like, most of the things were closed. There were, like, the little tiny general store that looks like it was from the pioneer ages was open, and that's, he was running the store. People still use it, and they make money off of it still, so.
Yeah, duly noted.
Yes, and so in Pioneer Town is a little gem of a place called Pappy and Harriet's, called Pappy's by the locals, and it is so incredible. I'm so glad that we found this in our searches of cool music stories in the United States, because this place, not that many people know about it, and it is so insane. So it was built in the 40s when Gene Autry and Roy Rogers and other like Hollywood investors decided to build this Pioneer Town, and Pappy and Harriet, the two people who eventually own it, their parents, or one of their parents, so Harriet's mom, Frances Alba, opened a working outlaw biker burrito bar, and it was actually used by bikers that were coming through the town. So it was just like the cantina in Pioneer Town, and it was actually a real like little restaurant that she opened in like on this movie set, in a sense. And then, so that was in 72. So this was like a little while after it was the actual film set was built. And then she ends up passing it down to her daughter, Harriet, and then Harriet's married to Alan Pappy. And Pappy was, like, known in the area as a really super friendly, like great character. And when he actually passed away, like, people from all over the place flew in for his memorial, and, like, he was a very, like, well-liked man. And I guess Victoria Williams actually dedicated a song to him called Happy to Have Known Pappy, which was released through Atlantic Records. So he was definitely a well-liked character. And Pappy and Harriet created this amazing sanctuary in the desert that, like, I guess all the locals would go to, and they would play live music with their granddaughter there sometimes.
Oh, cute.
And it was just, like, this amazing place. They really cultivated this culture there that has still, I think, survived until today. Like, there's still something about Pappy and Harriet's that is just a magical place, and the community feeling, it's very like jovial, multi-generational crowd that comes to see the shows there. And it's also a restaurant, so people go to get food as well.
So it makes sense, because there's really nothing around that. That if there's like music happening there, and I guess food, because I think we saw like only one other restaurant as we were like passing through that main road, then like everyone would go.
Yeah, totally. It was like definitely the neighborhood joint. And then so then after Pappy dies, Harriet ends up selling the place to like a family friend who owned it for, I think, just, it was like less than, I think, 2 years. He got into like some extreme debt with the place. And then enter two amazing New Yorkers out of nowhere. So Robin Celia and Linda Krantz are two New Yorkers. Robin Celia grew up in Jersey. I believe that Linda Krantz is also actually from the East Coast. Mm-hmm. Robin Celia was just a bartender, living her life in the city. They would go to Pappy and Harriet's like once a year. I think it was like New Year's, they said.
Yep, they would go on New Year's.
They would go and have like party there, just like have like a quick like weekend trip out there. And it was super fun. And it was like this great time in the desert. And then they would go back. And then at some point, Lucinda Williams releases her new album. And Robin Celia is a huge fan of Lucinda Williams and is like, oh my God, we need to get Lucinda Williams to play at Pappy and Harriet's. Like, we have to get her to play there and go see her. She reaches out to Lucinda Williams' manager and boom, gets a response out of nowhere, is not expecting it, and is like, oh my God, are you serious? Let's buy Pappy and Harriet's. She like heard it was for sale. She'd reached out to Lucinda Williams' manager who had responded to her. Everything was kind of like falling into place and she's like, oh my God, Linda, let's go buy this place.
Let's do it.
So they just out of nowhere buy it and then move out to Joshua Tree.
Which is so crazy. Because like, it's like, it just seems like the polar opposite of New York.
Yes.
It is. I mean, like.
But that being said, being there, it's a really unique, weird place.
Yeah.
Which so is New York. Very unique, weird place. And I think that. So apparently, the Joshua Tree Desert has attracted many musicians over the decades. And also, there are some musicians that were born in the area and, like, moved on to become famous musicians. And so Graham Parsons is one of most famously known musician to have spent a good amount of time in the area and was inspired by the scenery and everything there and the desert's magic. Keith Richards, Donovan, Victoria Williams, John Lennon. So there's a bunch of musicians who have spent a lot of time in the desert or who just created some of their music in the area.
It's
like, why? Why the desert? Why this place that's like, there's nothing really going on there? It's hot as hell. It's just like barren when you drive through, that's really how it feels. But it's also beautiful. And there's like, it's once again, just such a unique geography there that it's just a spiritual place and it's a peaceful place where musicians like to come and maybe get away from like the city scene and write music and have like a little getaway.
But yeah, I can totally see it because, well, first of all, the desert is not for me with the heat. Just like hats off to people who are living there constantly. It's very hard for me. But from like the inside, air conditioned out, it's so cool and it's just so unique. And when we actually did end up pulling over at a point to try to do our cover song in the middle of the desert. And it was so hot, no shade anywhere. And we did a few takes of Let Me Roll It, which is the cover we're doing for this episode. And it was like, even though I don't think that's going to be the one that makes it to the final cut because we were just so rushed and we couldn't, our gear was like melting in the sun and our phones were also melting in the sun. But while we were playing, I did actually feel, we were like talking about before, like it was like almost a magical out-of-body experience because it was so hot and it was so like just like playing music out there for like however long, maybe we're out there for like 15 minutes or something.
Mm-hmm.
It was just the heat made me like more in touch with the experience or something.
I was just
like really enjoying playing and like really like in a zone, which is because sometimes, you know, if you're like playing music a lot, you can get in a little rut sometimes and you're just going on autopilot. But it was very interesting. So I can definitely see the draw to the desert.
Yeah.
If you're an AC. And if you go out and immediately jump into like a pool or something. But I don't see any pools around there.
No. Yeah. But I felt the exact same when I was going to say that right when you said, I kind of felt like I had like a spiritual experience with that. So anyways, when Robin and Linda end up buying Pappy and Harriet's, their first show that they have there is Lucinda Williams because they'd booked her, I think, right, you know, like before or right when they bought the place. And that was like the first real show. I don't want to say it was like a real show. They had like Pappy and Harriet's was known to have like live music. Pappy and Harriet themselves played there.
Yeah.
They had like a house band, I'm sure. But this was the first like large act that played there. And then that kind of became like the catalyst for the rest of Pappy and Harriet's history going forward as this place, this sanctuary, this intimate venue for larger bands to come play, to rehearse before shows in the area in like LA, Coachella. So
it became like this kind of secretive, well, yeah, there were more like secret shows there or just like local intimate shows, which makes sense because it's like if you're going to have that anywhere, if you're going to have kind of a big artist come through, you can't really have a secret show in LA or something. People are just going to notice. So it makes sense to have that be in a location that's hard to get to.
Yes.
And so just the locals are going to come, and then anyone who is going to fucking like fly out randomly from somewhere, which there would be some people who do that, but it's like it's the perfect location to have bigger people there because it's like
hard
logistically
to get to.
People can't get there, and it ends up being like 350 people there.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure the capacity there is about 300 people, and they don't really announce the shows publicly other than like the local area, and then they might announce it like day before or something or the week of to like the greater California area, but that's pretty much it. And then if you like hear word of it and you're somewhere else in the United States, you might fly out or something. But most of the time, like, so the two I think most famous shows there, Robert Plant came and ended up playing with the house band and has come, I think, a few times since, just because he loved it so much there.
Wow, that's crazy.
And, yeah, so Robin tells that story so wonderfully, and she just, like, has great memories from when he played and who he was as a person, says he was a great guy, which I love to hear because he's one of my favorites.
Yeah.
And then the other one is Paul McCartney played. And so her story, I mean, I won't tell too much because we're going to interview her, and she just is the greatest storyteller.
Here it is.
Okay, so we're here with Robin from Pappy and Harriet's, who's one of the owners of Pappy and Harriet's Bar Saloon. Saloon?
I believe it's Pappy and Harriet's Pioneer Town Palace.
Okay, great.
That's like maybe the technical name, but whatever. It's usually just called Pappy's.
Okay, cool.
Okay. Which makes Harriet very upset. But people are lazy.
Pappy's.
And Harriet is still around.
Is still around, yeah.
Are you friends with her? I was going to ask you, how did like two New Yorkers hear word of a like Joshua Tree Pioneer Town Saloon?
Yeah, well, that's all Linda's fault. She was a prop master in the film business. Okay. Did a film in Pioneer Town.
Yep.
And so she would always come back and just be like, oh my God, you know, this place is amazing. So as all of our like little group of friends from New York would go to Pappy's every New Year's Eve and stay at the motel, get completely drunk, and just like, you know, crawl back to New York after the weekend was over.
It's so fun.
We heard it was for sale. September 11th just happened. We were kind of like, we weren't even around for the Brooklyn boom, really. I think we just got out before that. And it was kind of like, should we just like try something different? You know, like something like that. Wound up buying Pappy's, which was insane. But it was all because I was obsessed with Lucinda Williams.
Yeah.
And
okay. I was going to ask you how that connection came about too.
Because I just heard Car Wheels on a Gravel Road. And I was like, this is the greatest record I've ever heard in my life. Like, how do I not know this? And then wound up like trying to like, you know, find people that knew her. And then I did. And somehow like just on a whim made this offer to her agent and they accepted it.
Wow.
Which was insane. So then I was like, well, we have to buy Pappy's because Lucinda's going to play there.
Oh my God. And so before you'd even bought it?
Yes. That's how insane it was.
Oh my gosh. Did you say that you two did you own any business or restaurant or anything before?
No, I was a waitress. I was in a band. Linda was in the film business. We had nothing. It was like, this is like an, And it's kind of the same. We're still the same. We still do really dumb things. And then we're like, why did we do that? You know what I mean?
You know, they say that the worst ideas always turn out to be the best ideas in the end.
I guess. But I mean, 17 years later, we're still here, which is insane.
That is
insane.
Cool.
So you guys bought it in
2003.
I'm like, should be easy math. I'm like,
no, it's not. And we bought it from this guy. It wasn't even from Harriet. It was like this other guy that was an airline pilot. Mm-hmm. He didn't pay his taxes. So Pappy's had like a $250,000 tax lien on it, which we didn't know. So I book Lucinda Williams, right? We're so excited. And then we get this like message from the lawyer that's like, run. Don't walk. Run back to New York right now. This guy,
Lucinda Williams is going to be playing.
Yeah. So and I'm like, I'm like, you don't understand. Lucinda Williams is coming. And he's like, I don't know who that is. And I don't care. Just go.
Oh my gosh.
So we defy him. And then we like wound up just going to the IRS. And I was like, why do you have a tax lien on his land when he's an airline pilot? Just put it on his pension. Mm-hmm. And I think that actually worked and we got the lien dropped.
Wow.
So then we have Lucinda Williams in November. I don't know, the desert gets cold. It's freezing. It's freezing. And I'm like, I don't know what to do. But she played a 3-hour set and that was like, then we were on our way. Like to what we just, again, like even 17 years later, just pulling things together and just trying to keep it going.
Yeah. That's so crazy. Can you explain, so before you bought it, was there music happening there? Was it more like it was like some music kind of, but not any big names sort of thing? And then,
I mean, I think that they would be upset if I said there was always music at Pappy's. Like that is the number one thing about that place, you know? Although now with what's happened, I realized the food was really important as well, because there were so many times that I was like, God, I just wish we didn't have a restaurant. We could just be a music venue. And now I'm like, thank God we have this restaurant, because we would never have made it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But Harriet was a bass player. Pappy was a singer. They used to sing with all the desert people, locals out here. The magic came from them. Yeah. I mean, the building is what it is. I mean, the building is magic as well. The whole main street is still there.
Yeah, that's so cool.
Yeah. They have like little shops. Yeah. There's the Pioneer Town Motel. Right. Yeah. Stuff like that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But there's stuff to do, but it's nothing like, you know, what it was in the 40s. And then what it was in the 70s, it was just a full-on biker bar.
Yeah.
And Harriet's mom, Frances, was like a honorary Hell's Angel, and she wound up giving the place to Harriet.
Wow. Cool.
And that's how it became a family place.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like the bikers kind of went away. Although when we came and bought Pappy's, the bikers came back. And we were great.
I get along with these ladies.
Okay, this is hilarious. Actually, I'm feeling like our podcast is turning into like a Hell's Angels like tribute. Totally. Literally, because we're talking about the Doobie Brothers right before this, and they were like known as the Hell's Angels band. And now we're like, just like a total,
I guess just California in general is just biker town.
coming from New York, and I'm from, I grew up in New Jersey. I lived in Manhattan for like 20 years. Linda's born and raised Upper West Side.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, the Hell's Angels had their like little clubhouse, I believe on East 3rd in the East Village. I can't remember exactly the street, but like, it was just like a, you know, thing you saw in the movies. We come out here and it's like day one, they came to see the girls from New York. And we were like,
as we're the newest.
Okay, this is really scary, but exciting at the same time. And the Hell's Angels left us a plastic like sand, like ornament of the Statue of Liberty. We were like, where'd this come from? And they're like, oh, the Hell's Angels brought it for you. And we were like, oh my God. You know, scared but excited. And
so funny.
And then we were really thinking about buying it. JetBlue just started. So we would like literally fly from New York into the desert and just like stay here for, you know, a couple of days, talk to the locals, see if we thought we could pull it off. Mm-hmm. And then we just got the money and we did it. Bought it with credit cards, actually.
That's amazing.
That is such a great story. So we're highlighting musicians across the country. And so we found you guys. We definitely wanted to talk about you, obviously. And then we heard about the whole story about Paul McCartney.
Mm-hmm.
And Paul McCartney is my absolute all-time favorite. I have a Hofner bass and it's the only bass I've ever played in my life. And
okay.
So, and then I met him. Like
in
2013, I literally chased down his car and like threw myself in his window and gave him flowers.
Okay, that's nice.
We were going to his show and I like had a brief like hello and he said hello and it was made my life when I was a senior in high school. So anyways, so obviously we saw that he played there and he's like a huge inspiration to our music and stuff. So then I wanted to talk to you about that and how that all got set up and what are other favorite stories of yours from the musicians that have played over the years and that you've booked there?
Well, I would definitely say I wish in a lot of ways that after Paul McCartney, I could have just been like, bye everybody. See you later. I'm done. Like, it's okay. I know that he was playing that desert. Was it Desert Trip? What was it called? It was, they were calling it Old Cella.
Oh, huh. Yes, 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 yes.
So it was like, I think it was McCartney, Bob Dylan, yep. The Stones, and like The Who.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Yeah.
Right?
All the classics.
Yeah.
So I think
that was in 2016.
And Neil Young. And so that was 2016.
Okay. Yeah.
And I think, in my opinion, I don't think that, I don't know if this is true, but I do think that, for some reason, like, I feel like, I don't know, like, I've always loved Paul McCartney, but I feel like he doesn't get, like, the cred that he deserves. Do you know what I mean? So I think that everybody was just like, oh, the Stones and Neil Young. And, like, no one was really saying, like, yo, Paul McCartney. Like, it was just nothing about him.
Yeah.
And then one of our really good friends and a regular, her name is Becky Newton. She was friends with Paul McCartney's manager. And I think what happened really was just, like, they were looking for him to do something cool. Like, what would be cool for like him to do? Like, I think Neil Young would do a surprise show sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Has Paul, you know, I don't really know if Paul did it prior. He probably has, but who knows? Anyway, I get an email from this guy that's like, I want to come check out your venue. I have an international recording artist that wants to play. And I just kind of like I Googled the guy and I was like, his like clients were like Tina Turner, George Michael, Paul McCartney. I'm like, it's Paul McCartney.
Oh my God. You must've been flipping.
So I know I was freaking out. I was freaking out for a long time where actually with my OCD, I only played the Beatles or Wings until the show actually happened. Like if I didn't, I had to only play Paul McCartney.
That's perfect.
Because I loved the Beatles, you know, growing up. And I remember even when I could see that we were getting in deep with this, I thought to myself, like, do you want to go there? Like, do you want to have Paul McCartney play here?
Yeah.
You know, because it's going to like change everything. But mm-hmm. I thought to myself, like, you know, for me, I wanted it in a lot of ways. It wasn't for like the community or for, it was like, I wanted to say like, are you kidding me? Like, really?
Yeah, like
this guy fucking just plays playing here?
Yeah.
That's crazy. And so a lot of things happened. Like I had to jump through a lot of hoops. It was always, we had code names for it because if the show was leaked, it would be done in a second. Like they would just pull the plug. So I definitely, it was just me, Linda, my partner who owns Pappy's, and our sound guy, Jason, who wound up quitting right after the show was over.
I gotta leave when I'm on top.
He's like, I'm done. Like, I can't do this anymore. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
He was older too. Like, I think he's had it. But it was so intense, and I don't really know that, like, we knew how intense it was gonna be, you know? But.
So you kept, were you able to keep it a secret for.
We really were. And when it was announced, I remember calling the police department. I was like, look, I'm gonna announce a show tomorrow. And it's going to be something really big. I just want to give you guys the heads up. And they were like, yeah, whatever. It, you know, doesn't matter.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, no big deal. And then, you know, the next morning it's announced and like instantly all the cops are at the club. And I'm like, of course. You know what I mean? Why?
Yeah.
Crazy. And like, Paul was rehearsing in my, we have another barn, like that's like adjacent to the club. He rehearsed there. I mean, I didn't meet him. I could have met him. Don't be mad at me.
Yeah. But
when they said, do you want to come meet Paul? I was like, I just can't even move right now because there were so many people that were like trying to get into the show that were like our quote unquote friends. And I had to deal with that as well. Mm-hmm. Like, how do I keep them at bay? Because he didn't want to play outside. So he wanted to play inside. So we only had 300 people. And Paul's guest list was probably about 80 people.
He's like, I know a few people at this point in my life. Few people
right? Totally. It's like, you know, funny. And so it was really, really hard, but it was also like, you know, hearing Hey Jude in under my roof.
Everyone's
just fucking like hysterically crying. You know, I mean, it was insane.
Yeah.
And he played a really long time. He sounded great. He was in great spirits. And I think he, you know, we were trying to push it to be an outside show, but he had said, I want to smell my audience. So believe me, he smelled them.
Well,
it was like,
that must have been just like the most amazing thing for him, because when was the last time he played a show that small? Probably
who knows?
Like when he was,
I don't know, adults,
you know? Yeah.
In Germany. Like when they played
the Indra with Indra.
What was it called?
In Hamburg. Indra or Hamburg. the Cavern Club, probably. Mm.
I think the Cavern for sure. And so, and then the next night we had Tommy Stinson from The Replacements and I felt so bad for him. He walked up to the microphone and said, this microphone smells like Paul McCartney. That's all he could do. What was he going to do?
Yeah.
Everybody was just so insane.
Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. That was so
crazy.
Such a good story.
Yeah.
I feel like we were reading a tiny bit about it on some article, and it was saying that like one of the employees at Pappy's was like when it was being kept a secret, it was like someone was like, what, like who's gonna walk in? It's not like it's gonna be one of the Beatles.
my friend Stu was like, what is it gonna, a Beatles gonna walk in the room? And I was like, oh my god. Like, yeah, actually.
I'm in my face right now.
And it's not Ringo.
Yeah.
I love Ringo, but still.
Right.
It wasn't, you know.
Yeah. Oh,
yeah, it was nuts.
That's amazing. What do you think like the majority of the crowd that wasn't his guest list? What were they, mostly locals then? Like people
is that what typically happens?
Like, I think they gave it enough time that if you did live in San Francisco, you could jump on a flight and get there.
Yeah.
You know, I think that they wanted it to be locals only, but at the same time wanted to give the heads up to LA and San Francisco. And that's why KCRW announced it. Cause let's face it. I mean, in a very strange way, I almost feel like they were almost insecure about it too. Like, are people going to come? And I'm like, that's what makes somebody like Paul McCartney so amazing, because there still is that person that's like, will people come?
Mm-hmm.
And it was like Beatlemania in 1 second. In 1 second, like it was like, oh my God, how are we going to do this? Like, how are we going to do it? Like, have you ever seen the video where that? I think, it's incredible.
Yes, that's amazing. And there's something about like Paul McCartney and Beatles fans too, because we've been to two of his shows now. Mm. And like, there's just like a camaraderie there that's so unique. I felt like of all the shows I've been to, it's just because it's continued for so long and it's still so strong. So it's like,
people and it still means so much.
Yeah. And it's just amazing. Like, I remember I was sitting next to like a 70-year-old man at one of the concerts, and we had all bought our tickets. Like, we were all, my friends and Rebecca and I were like separate because we'd all bought the best tickets we could. And it was, they all be like all over the
arena.
Yeah. The arena. So I was like by myself with the 7-year-old man who we just like immediately bond over this. And we're like,
exactly.
Throughout the whole concert, like looking at each other, like crying, you know, it was so, and it's like, that's the kind of thing I can totally imagine the vibe in that room. And it's so,
it was amazing.
Yeah.
And it was something that, like, I wanted to hold on to. It was like, I want to stand on this like beer, like milk crate or whatever behind the bar. And I want to watch the show, because those 2 months like took a lot out of, like, I remember we had Jim James from My Morning Jacket playing outside.
Wow.
And I got a phone call. This is prior to, like, we're in like the production of Paul. Mm-hmm. And so I get like a phone call. It's like, hey, Paul's people are coming via helipad. Can you pick them up tonight? They want to come see Jim James and see what the outdoor is like. And I was like, okay, you know, and then Jim James's tour manager is like, hey, Jim really wants that quesadilla. I'm like, yeah, coming right up, getting that quesadilla, you know what I mean? But I've got to go fucking pick up like Paul McCartney's people. Like, I've got to do that now.
Yeah.
Running down to the helipad, like, hello, hi, oh, you know, bring him up. And it's like, wow, it sure is dark around here. I'm like, yeah, it's the desert. Like, oh my God. And then they're looking around and Jim's playing and I'm not paying any attention to Jim James or what he needs or anything.
You've like become a personal assistant.
Yeah. Oh my God. I was like, no. I can't deal with this right now. And so then Paul's people, and they're like older, you know, English guys, and they're walking around and I'm just kind of like, please have it outside. Like, I want to see Paul McCartney's hair blowing in the wind. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
And no, they're like, no, I think we want to do it inside. And I was just kind of like,
because
okay.
I guess, like, what would have happened if it was outside? People probably would have crowded.
It would have been crazy.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
Yeah.
So but we were able to, like, and then, like, I think it was, like, you know, 2 hours before showtime. You know, Pappy's has a lot of taxidermy on the walls, which I never really noticed before. And then it was like, Paul doesn't want to see any dead animals. Get everything off the walls. And we're like,
oh, Paul. That is so, like, quintessential, like, superstar.
But it's also, like, such a, like, he really means what he's saying. Yeah. Like, so we're just, you know, we grabbed everything we could off the wall and just, that was it.
Yeah.
The next morning, I opened up a shed and screamed because there were, like, so many dead animals looking at me. I was just like, oh, my God.
Oh, that's so great. I'm so glad that was his superstar request.
Yes.
I know, like, instead of like, I need a grilled cheese or something.
Oh, no.
Like, yeah.
No. He had his own food person and she, you know, because he's super vegan. You know what I mean? Like, it's not.
Yeah.
Like, oh, it's real.
I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. He does his like meat.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Amazing.
We weren't allowed to serve meat that day.
Nice.
Yep. He's good with that. He's been very, of all like, the huge like international superstars, I feel like he's been very politically aligned. Like he was
probably
out
like
at the protests. Like there were videos of him at like the like anti-gun protests.
Yeah, and Black Lives Matter.
Yeah, he's done a really good job with that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
cool.
He's amazing.
Yeah, that's so
cool. So yeah,
so exciting that you got that experience. What a once in a while.
Yeah, so then after that you're just like, all right, I'm just gonna retire.
If I could have left then, that would have been great. And and I would never have experienced what we're like, this coronavirus. I could have just been like, see you later. I'll talk to you guys. I mean, it should have been that way. I mean, how do you even like go like, where do you go from that?
Yeah.
And there was like major, like we called it like post-Paul depression. We were just like, we were fucking bummed. Everybody's amazing, but like that was something that it was just like,
oh yeah.
I remember after Rufus Wainwright played, I was like, what? Like, how did Rufus Wainwright play in this place? It's when you come to Pappy's, you're going to be like, you've got to be kidding me. I mean, you could say it's a dive bar, but it's an original old roadhouse. Like, it's not like built to like look like one of those places. Like, it is that place. Pappy's added on, like Pappy, the actual person Pappy added on to it, but it probably was started in the 40s, added on in the 70s, where it was just like full on biker insanity.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then I think Pappy tried to like, you know, he built the stage, which was like a very small stage. We've since built it up because we had Billy Joe Armstrong from Green Day play. This is after Paul.
Post-Paul.
Post-pre. And I thought he was going to die when he was crowd surfing. So I was like, we've got to figure something out. And we wound up building like the stage up and knocking down the ceiling. I wish we did that before, but we didn't know that we could.
Yeah.
So at least, you know, whatever. That's okay. Wait,
how many people does it usually hold? Like inside is like, what, like 300 or...
I would say 350 with all the tables brought out. So with Paul, we probably had four, I would think. Like, but, like it definitely wasn't what.
Oh my gosh, that's so cool. I also heard that Robert Plant made an appearance.
Yeah, that happened in like 2006.
Oh, that was earlier. Okay. Okay, cool. And then he played with like the house band, I heard, or something.
Yep.
That must have been insane.
Again, I was the sound person then. So I was like, come on.
You're like that. Somebody
that
else.
That was crazy, but it was like, it definitely was like something that we didn't like, thank God didn't get leaked. I think he felt really comfortable. I think the second time he was going to come, for some reason, it was leaked.
Yeah.
And I think he just was like, I'm not going to do that. Mm-hmm. Which makes me sad because he was like the nicest guy you've ever met. Like, seriously, like he was just like so down to earth and so cool. Man. And he came to see Wanda Jackson the night before. And then he was like, I said to Victoria Williams, I don't know if you, do you know who she is?
Yeah.
She's an amazing singer-songwriter. She's a local out here for way longer than me. Mm-hmm. And he loved her. And I was like, Vic, Robert Plant's here. You should go say hello to him. And she was like, oh, what do you think that, like, and she has like this crazy accent from Louisiana. And she was like, oh, like all of us musicians know each other. And I was like, well, you know, maybe you should just like say hi. Turns out he sees her and he goes, oh my God, Victoria Williams? Like I'm a huge fan. And I was just like, hello, Vic. You know,
he's
like, came up to me. Can I come sing with the band tomorrow? Whatever. He shows up and he did like, I would say 16 songs, like something around that, like from covers to, he did like, If I Were a Carpenter by Johnny Cash, he did Season of the Witch by Donovan. He did Thank You by Zeppelin. We were like, that's when everybody was just like hysterically, like, you got to be kidding.
Oh my God. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Just, but again, really cool guy. Just wanted to hang out and just have fun.
So great. So do you have regulars who like show up every night expecting that there might be Robert Plant or Paul McCartney there?
Well, I mean, I feel like before the pandemic, I think that people would just be excited, like, wow, I wonder if somebody will show up.
Yeah.
But now, no.
Yeah.
Which is so sad. It's like,
I guess every one of our questions should be like, when it's not COVID.
I don't know. Yeah. So like, for me growing up where I grew up, I like literally was like right over the George Washington Bridge. Uh-huh. So I was just like, I went to New York like every single day, like from when I was probably like 11. Mm-hmm. And that's like, you know, saying a lot about my generation. We just fucking did whatever we wanted to do. Like our parents were like, yeah, just be home for dinner. All right, bye. Like, see you later. There were no cell phones. There was nothing. And, you know, we were able to like experience, you know, music in a way that I don't know. And like, we were able to move to New York back in the day, like where it was like $400 for like, you know, a 7-floor walk up in the East Village.
Yeah.
I'm not kidding you guys. Like you moved there if you didn't have any money.
That is
so it's like, I feel bad for you guys because it's like, I mean, I don't feel, I mean, I, you know, you no, can experience it, what it is.
Yeah. It's really, the other thing is like, it's just an interesting thought to think about how the city is going to change because it's already like, I mean, talking to all of our friends over there, it's like so hard for everybody just figuring out their relationship with the city now because it's most people move there. Obviously they deal with all the shit of New York City to be in New York
City.
And now it's like, you can't be in New York City. So you're dealing with the shit and you don't even get the benefits of it really anymore. Yeah. So it's just like, I mean, it's weird. It's a weird place.
I can't imagine. I really can't because it was like, it used to be like a very like free place. Like you could just, I don't know. When I like went there for the first time from being a kid in New Jersey, I was just kind of like, okay, like I'm fucking out of New Jersey. I love New Jersey, but like I'm done. Like I'm going to move here. Yeah. And then to move from New York to Pioneer to the desert. I mean, to think about like having a chip on your shoulder from New York, like coming out here.
Yeah.
And then I was like, I live in the fucking desert and there's like rattlesnakes everywhere. Oh like, my God. Forget it. Like now I'm like, now I have a chip on my shoulder. You know, it's crazy. And like, there's so many people that I've met from New York that are moving out to Joshua Tree. Cause they're like, I'm, you know, I don't want to live in there anymore.
I mean, Joshua Tree is iconic though, in as like a music scene and a place
right.
of history and culture similar to New York. So I can understand that.
Yeah.
I mean, it's so different, but in that way.
Similar and exact opposite. And,
totally.
Yeah. But I'm
similar
so
and different.
Though. Yeah, it's so funny.
You guys definitely have an East Coast sensibility about you both. Like you can, like I can that's see
funny.
That.
That's so funny because we have heard that from people when we moved out.
Oh, I would.
Yeah, I take that I as a compliment. Yeah.
Oh, no, you should. Because it's like no one's direct anymore. Like yeah. it's like. Just to be just a little bit direct with somebody yeah. is like
well, that's
amazing.
What my mom coming from the East Coast has been annoyed about her entire life being here. She's like, you can't like no one means what they say and like no.
Yeah,
one
you can't just say like, hey, can you get the fuck off this chair? Like, yeah. don't cry. It's yeah. okay. Well, good for you guys, and I hope you guys are all right. And just
thanks.
Please try to say hi to me when you're coming to Pappy's. Like,
oh my gosh, because. We will.
If we are closed when you get there, just like text me and I'll okay. open it up for you.
That was the most fun interview. Robin, you're the absolute best. We love you. And I hope that we're back in Joshua Tree soon, just specifically to see you again.
We might move there.
You may have convinced us. A little note about Pappy's also. It's been written up in a lot of different places. You can look it up online in different articles and stuff. And so it's not super well known, obviously, but it was ranked number 13, which was above Madison Square Garden, the Troubadour, and others. In Consequence of Sound's top 100 greatest American music venues.
Wow. Which, I mean, I've never been to Madison Square Garden, but I'd so rather be at like
oh
a
my God,
small
yeah.
show in the middle of the desert.
Yeah, than, because like, there are like, so I think of the Troubadour, which we've been to, and it's like, also, that's an amazing, very small, intimate
yeah,
venue.
Yeah, I love that one.
Small, but big enough, you know, and it's also super famous. So you're there and you're like, oh my God, all these amazing musicians have played here. This is incredible to be here.
Yeah.
And it's just the vibe in there is great. Mm-hmm. And so you think of that and like, that's really what makes a music venue special is like, yeah, Madison Square Garden, I guess I'm not really surprised. Like yeah. that's a crazy huge venue. Obviously that would be like on your goal list as a musician to play, yeah.
but
it's
if you
not
can,
like,
if you can go see a musician that would play yes. at Madison Square Garden, but see them at a smaller
right.
venue instead.
If we're talking, like audience experience.
Oh yeah, and musician experience.
And musician experience. Totally.
Sorry, but like, I don't want to be. I mean, I've never. I don't want to be playing at Madison Square Garden. No, I've never played an arena huge show, but I can imagine that probably has its very cool things to it. But I feel like after a while, you'd be like. You know, there's not as much intimacy or interaction with the crowd or anything.
Yeah.
So it's like you would definitely want to be able to have that experience again as like a really popular musician
yeah.
to like go back to this 350 person mm-hmm. small venue. And yeah.
Yeah. And it's like it's also like a safe atmosphere. You're not like worried about crazy shit happening
yeah.
because it's an isolated place.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, it's been written up in like. By Billboard, and it was featured in one of Anthony Bourdain's episodes in the U.S. Desert episode, I guess.
Oh, wow.
South by Southwest made a documentary called Pioneer Town Palace, which is
really
it is. It's called Pappy and Harriet's Pioneer Town Palace. That's the full name of it.
Yeah.
Be fun to watch that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's a very it's a cool place, and I think it's really cool that it's sustained that kind of intimate feel and that like. Special vibe about it that
yeah
that has really been maintained over the years
because there is really no way for it to get bigger than it is
no,
because it's out in the middle of nowhere so
yeah.
it's like it's not like having this venue in whatever the middle of New York or something just for example mm-hmm. that like has secret shows and is smaller and intimate and then people find out about it and then mm-hmm. it's not cool anymore but it's like this is a place that, once again, logistically and geographically, you can't get any bigger.
Mm-hmm. But that being said, they do still have to be very careful. Like, when they booked Paul McCartney, I mean, Robin had to make sure it was, like, she couldn't tell anybody. She couldn't even tell the employees at Pappy's
that he was
the one playing, because if it got out, I mean, it would just get chaotic. I mean,
yeah, definitely.
I mean, I would, if I had known about that, I probably would have flown down there to see. Yeah. Are you kidding me?
Exactly.
I totally would have done that.
That's so, why they only give like a day notice.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
That you don't
so
go down.
I can't go. Damn it.
Yeah.
But I would be staked out there like for days on end waiting for him.
Yeah.
So we have chosen to sing
Let Me Roll It
by Paul McCartney. Let Me Roll It by Paul McCartney and the Wings. Paul McCartney is obviously one of our favorites, specifically mine. He's my absolute idol. And since his is one of the most fun stories from Pappy's, we decided we'd do a cover of his. And we've wanted, we actually have never done a Paul McCartney cover.
Yeah.
But we've
Even
wanted
though
to in the past.
He's not an American musician.
Yeah, we do realize that.
We thought we would just, you know, this is an excuse for us to do one. We love him, and it was one of the coolest stories from this thing we're highlighting. So,
yes.
In the episode notes, you can go to the our cover video link and see that. And tune in next time. We'll be talking about ghost stories at Red Rocks.
Excited. If you are ever in the Joshua Tree area, go stop by Pappy's in Pioneertown. Say hi to Robin. I think that they've got some socially distant concerts planned for the near future. So keep an eye out for that if you're in California. They've also got a great menu of food there. So you can stop by and just grab some lunch.
So thank you all for listening again. It's been great. What a lovely, lovely area Joshua Tree is, and fun stories that come with it. Just to tie this episode off, we wanted to acknowledge that we've been on Serrano land throughout this episode. Anyway, we'll catch you next time.
See you next time, Road Dogs.
Bye.